on bars, shackled, in the world, are locked up here in the land of the free.
Khalif Browder was walking home from a party when he was stopped by police.
Then they said, we're going to take you to the precinct, and most likely we're going to let you go home. And then I never went home.
The 13th Amendment to the Constitution makes it unconstitutional for someone to be held as a slave. There are exceptions, including criminals.
The loophole was immediately exploited. What you got after that was a rapid transition to a mythology of black criminality. Some people got
the real problem. Animals, beasts that needed to be controlled.
You better believe it.
Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. That was just a little clip from Ava DuVernay's award-winning documentary, 13th. Which really looks at the 13th Amendment and uses that as a lens to talk about Jim and Jane Crow. When we talk about what's happening in the mass industrial prison complex, let's talk about the fact that we as black folks in this country, we have multiple systems of oppression packed on top of our heads. So if I'm asking the question about whether or not we're committing genocide, right? Because that's what we started in the first hour. We need to unpack that all the way out. And we need to really begin to take a hard look at the systems of oppression that sit on the back of black people in this country. For us to commit genocide, right? It means that we've gotten to a point where we're believing the advertising about us. We've gotten to the point where we think that the only way out of this oppression is to fight our way out. We've gotten to a point where, for us, power is about a block, not about getting real systems of power, because real systems of power have been denied to us ever since slavery was legalized in this country. So the question about genocide unfolds into a bigger, deeper question about what's happening both in this country and, even more important, what's happening in this city. That's the conversation I want to have in this hour. Now, I was talking to Justina over the break. This is a heavy conversation for Friday. And a lot of people are not happy with this type of conversation for Friday. So we went to Tracy. And Tracy deals with all of our tickets. And we say, you know, we need something to make people feel a little bit better. We do have some hope. So Tracy dug down deep, and she came up with two tickets to Porgy and Bess. Now, you remember earlier this week, Tracy told us we gave out our last two tickets. But with a conversation about genocide and black folks being killed and what we can do to stop it, we had to just break it for a moment. Play a little Chaopoly because, folks, no matter what, with 400 years of oppression and 400 years of struggle, there's also been 400 years of joy and 400 years of happiness and 400 years of survival, because we are descendants of people who chose to survive. So we have a Chaopoly compilation. 65, what is it, Dre? It's the one that I'm trying to see, the one here that has it all here. I don't know which one it is. So I'm going to have to trust Dre, not the one that's wrapped, Dre, but the one that I did. So I'm going to need Dre to do it, that has this compilation. And I need you to call and tell me the name of the song, as well as people who are singing the song. And we will give out the tickets. And once we do that, we'll come back to our conversation. And I'm going to go to Valerie first, and then I'll go to True. Come on, Dre, let's play it.
Some roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with string. These are a few of my favorite things.
Raindrops and roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. Cream-colored ponies and crisp apple strudel, doorbells and sled bells and schnitzel with noodles.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
You know, folks, I had to play that Kaopoi compilation for me because I have to remind myself sometimes that even though it gets hard and even though we are struggling in this country and even though we're dealing with oppression, I love being Black. I love what our people do and how creative we are and the fact that we can take the oppression we've been given us and we can still create community. We can take all of the hostility and we can still find places to love. We can take all the hatred and we can still find a way to laugh. We can laugh through our tears because we know what it means to survive being Black in this country because we're doing it every single day. 410-319-8888. Hello, Valerie from downtown Baltimore. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Dr. K. One of the callers said it before I did, but, you know, we have to give white America applause. They did a wonderful job on controlling us and actually taking our lives and turning it into what you see today. And one of your callers said something about let's not blame. Slavery has everything, literally everything, to do with what you're seeing today. What do you think that slaves did with the, or what did our ancestors, my father, your father, their father, do with the anger felt from the discrimination and slavery that they experienced in the past? I'm a social scientist. Okay? And that doesn't go away by itself. It's contained in the mind and the body, and it creates psychological problems. Okay? And I can personally give you a personal story. As I grew up, my father went for a job. He had 6 kids. He had a home he was about to lose. He went for a job. It was his last chance to save his home for his 6 children. And this white man looked at him and said, I'm not hiring that nigga. Okay? That threw my father into a depression that you would never believe. And we suffered as a result of it. Don't tell me that slavery and discrimination does not have a psychological effect on us. It does. These kids out here are experiencing the residual effects of slavery. Their parents' parents, the hatred, the cruelty. We were taught to hate ourselves. We were told we were ugly. You're Black. You're no good. You're dumb. You know? So their parents have experienced. My father suffered alcoholism from the fact that a man told him he was not good enough to hire. He's a Black man with pride. He lost his home, his 6 children. He had to find a place for them to live. Racism does a job on us, and I don't mind sharing my experiences. We have to, and even the people calling in and saying these things, they have done a job on us and made us believe that racism and slavery has no impact on what we're experiencing now, and it does. We need psychological help. We never talk about slavery.
We don't
talk about the effects of it. So I appreciate you giving us this opportunity, and I'm sorry I got a little emotional.
But, Valerie, that's what
it
the
still
show is
affects
for.
Me. So, you know, don't say that. It does. Thank you, Dr. K.
Thank you so much. Folks, that's what the show is for. Today with Dr. K, to me, it's not just to have a 2-hour conversation about, I don't know, the Kardashians or whatever they're doing or what's happening in the lives of the Obamas. I mean, I think we need to use these 2 hours and have real hard conversations about ourselves. Other people can listen in if they want. That's fine. But you know what? We've been listening in on the issues involving white folks forever. We have been. On television, on the radio, in the news. We've been listening in, and we are so indoctrinated that we probably can solve the problems of white America and never even think about our own. So why not have a space where we can talk about our problems and look to address them head on, even though it's hard? We have Inez on the phone from Randallstown. Inez, how are you?
I'm fine, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well. So they tell me you're calling to get those tickets to Porgy and Bess.
Yes, but first I'd like to take my hat off to the lady who just called. She is so right. And I'm at a point where I don't want to talk about it anymore. I need to know what to do about it.
Right. Right. You're absolutely right. And we're trying to get to that. What do we do?
Well, back to the soft stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
A little bit of soft stuff is always nice on a Friday afternoon. Right, Inez?
Yeah, to calm my heart down.
I'm telling you.
Okay. These are a few of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. And I believe the first singer was Barbara Streisand, Diana Ross, and Luther Vandross.
Oh, you got two of the three. But you know what, though, Inez? Because we need some stuff to lighten us up. You hold on, because we're going to give you a prize anyway. We got something for you. We're going to hold those tickets,
so
but we will give you a prize anyway. Because, folks, we need a little bit of something. I mean, I know that even when times are hard, that story that Valerie told, hey, I've been there. I've been there at times when there was just no money coming in the house, nothing. Like, what you had is what you just simply had to deal with. And there was no food, and there was simply no food. And that's just what the reality was. But my mother would always find a way to take the very little that we had and make it feel like a Sunday dinner. I mean, she made us feel like we were eating filet mignon, even though it was nothing but cut up hot dogs. And she would cut the hot dogs up small and put in one of those cans of like spaghetti or raviolis or something, and made us feel like we were feasting. When in so many ways, now that I talk to her, we were in the middle of a famine. But she buffered the impact of that famine because she wanted us as children to experience joy, to experience love, to experience happiness. And that is part of the strength of who we are as people, folks. And we have to remember that. We have Daphne on the phone from East Baltimore. Daphne, how are you?
How are you?
I'm doing well.
I'm seeing you on television the other night.
Oh, thank you.
And I really need to talk to you one-on-one.
Yes,
I'm standing here right now looking at the trees right now. And the trees are the color of color folks, okay?
Mm.
We're brown people, we're gray black people, we're blue black people. And when you look at when the spring comes up, the white leaves that comes out, they disappear immediately. This thing that the Caucasian people are doing, especially in Ohio, I'm telling you, the heavens just said, Ohio is cursed for doing the things that they've been doing. And I'm one of the products of them doing something to me. I've been studying for the past 38, 39 years. If our children can't get in touch with their spirituality, their physicality, and their intelligence, to put all three together,
right,
I have the solution. And I would like to leave my phone number so you can call me.
Daphne, hold on. Justina will come to you, folks. Daphne is offering up a solution. I will speak to her one-on-one. I'll get that solution. I'll bring it back to you. I have Jerome on the phone from Baltimore. Jerome, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Ken. How are you?
I'm doing well. So they tell me that you're calling to both make a comment and try to get those Porgy and Bess tickets.
Well, I don't really want to comment, but all you do need help. I'm in the system, and I see it all the time. I don't have a solution right now, but I just pray for everybody. That's my solution.
Well, prayer, you know, the prayers of a righteous man does availeth much. So your prayers are not in vain, Jerome. So
okay.
Now that that's been said, go ahead and win these tickets for me. Come on.
Okay. I think she did this piece. Mary J. Blige is the first one, I believe. And the second one is, I think it was the Supremes that did it, Diana Ross and Supremes. And third, of course, is Luther Vandross.
Absolutely. It was the Mary J. Blige that she got wrong. I didn't think people would get that. Jerome, I am so glad that you called and that you have won. Oh, wait a minute. Justina said you didn't tell us the name of the song.
Uh-oh. Oh, these are a few of my favorite things.
Okay, I'm sure the judges will accept that. Okay, the judges will accept that. My favorite things. Jerome, we have two tickets for you for Porgy and Bess. You have to hold on because Justina has to get your email address so we can get them to you, okay? Hold on 1 second, folks. Let's keep having our conversation. And let's expand it a little bit. The GBC, which is the Greater Baltimore Community, I took a look at their board. Kevin Plank, the president of Hopkins, the president of Morgan, the head of Associated Black Charities, an archbishop. I mean, somebody who actually sits on the UMS board, like all of these folks sit on the Greater Baltimore Committee. This is the business community, and they have released a statement calling for our mayor to resign. I just want to just put one thing out as we're talking about whether or not we love ourselves, whether or not we're committing genocide. We live in a city right now, folks, where the Greater Baltimore Committee, their board of directors, they're saying our mayor no longer has public trust or moral authority to lead the city. When you talk about the reality of Baltimore City, we have all of these shootings that have taken place since Tuesday. There was a single shooting, two double shootings, a triple shooting, and a quadruple shooting since Tuesday, from Tuesday to Thursday, folks. And we have instability in our political system. When we say if we're at war and we wonder whether the city is broken, I mean, these are some big questions we have to ask, looking at the reality of what's around us. We have Fred on the phone from East Baltimore. Fred, how are you? Hello, Fred. Are you with us?
Dr. K, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir.
Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
You know, we were talking about the what's wrong with the black community and what's going on in our community.
Yes.
Thought I'd just add three words to the conversation. Eugenics,
yes.
Subliminal subduction, and cybernetics. You take a group of people and you strip them of their identity, completely strip them of their identity. You remake them in your image. That's what they did to the black community. That's why the slavery that the blacks suffered in America is greater than any slavery at any time ever.
Yes. Chattel slavery is the absolute worst.
Well, not so much the chattel slavery as the fact that you remove a person's identity.
Yeah, which was a part of it, but go ahead.
Okay. Yes. My grandmother said he used to work, pick cotton all day and party all night. So black people invented night shifts because, you know, they had to make their time work for their thing. Like you're talking about the food.
Mm-hmm.
We invented soul food out of scraps. So we are residual people, you know, we can survive. But look what we're up against. Anytime you can live in the capital of the United States, where they have the NSA, the ABC, the XYZ, all the agencies in the world, and you can become a drug kingpin in the middle of all that, and nothing's done about it, it's by design what's happened to our community. After the Civil Rights Movement, they created the Vietnam War so that the poor whites and poor blacks could have something to do besides kill each other on the streets in America.
Mm.
They sent us to Southeast Asia. Same thing happened during the Civil War.
Right, that's the idea, yes.
I mean, as soon as you talk about, you know, bringing out the poor people, making them free, then you have to set out a solution. It's called the Negro Solution. I know you heard that statement
before.
I have.
Huh? I have.
Eugenics.
Yeah, no, the idea, and eugenics, folks, if you're not familiar, is this whole idea of controlled breeding.
The birth of black people.
All right, thank you so much, Fred. I appreciate you. Folks, now, Fred was talking about, you know, slavery, we call American enslavement. Now, I use the term chattel slavery because with the four types of slavery, chattel slavery is actual seeing the people, the enslaved, as property, as chattel. Chattel slavery has also been called traditional slavery, so we were speaking the same thing. I was just attaching it to the more historic understanding of it. We have True on the phone. True's a new call from Owens Mills. True, how are you? And welcome to the family.
Hey, Dr. K.
Hey.
Yeah, I find it very interesting, like the last call that talked about the Vietnam War. I think everything else is tied into Baltimore specifically, how this was an industrial town, and a lot of our fathers, grandfathers worked in these industries. They didn't have a lot of education. They were able to buy the properties that are now abandoned, that are now empty. And we've kind of fled to the county, I guess, to seek a better life, better schools and everything else.
Right.
You know, those things and the change in the economy directly affected us. Now, everybody's not going to finish high school, let alone go to college. So what do they do, you know, now that we're in a service industry? You don't have, like, kids going to Bastille at 18, 19 years old. You know, they're not going to GM. They're not going to the steel mill or the shipyards anymore. And those were scale pay. I mean, you could send kids to college. They had benefits. They had pensions and everything. Now you no longer have that. That's directly tied into what's going on out here in the streets. You know, when you mentioned the Vietnam War, it was the Vietnam War. It was the advent of welfare.
Right.
It was also, you know, you also had the influx of heroin and everything that was going on as far as changing from industrial to now the information age. We're not prepared. We're not being educated for that. That's plain and simple. It ties in directly into today also.
Right.
Last thing, point I want to make, I think it's very, I don't look at local news generally. I think it's very psychotic, and I hate to use this word, that I think that these cities that we count bodies, I think that's a very inhumane thing, and it's very, and it makes us very numb.
Right.
You know, because there's no way, like I said, we can go, we can, I mean, I got to bring it in, black lives and white lives, you know, one white life is taken, the city will stop.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
We're talking 300. If 300.
Yes, that's what
white
I'm saying.
People were killed,
yes.
There would be National Guard in every corner of the city.
There would be. And everybody would be working overtime trying to find a solution.
Man,
come on.
City,
come on.
State, federal. Every school police, everybody would be out.
It would be a national emergency. And we know this. Thank you so much, True. We know this because we're just looking at history, folks. We're not speaking hyperbole. We're talking about historically, this country does respond differently. I mean, how many TV shows have you seen where they have had a white person, just think of any episode, a white person's kidnapped and they go into the black community looking and the black community has responded by saying, hey, but black girls are taken. Black girls are killed. The black boys are killed. And it's never that much of a big deal. I think what is interesting is that we had Dr. Treva Lindsay on the phone earlier this week, and she talked about looking to protect people, black people who are on the margins of the margins, that white supremacy does not love us. Therefore, we must love and love on each other hard. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. When we come back, I'm going to give you a list of places and people that have called for our mayor to resign in a city that just really might be best described as being at war. Today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us. Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. We're having a difficult and challenging conversation. We have been looking at the figures both around the country and in this country. So during the Iraq War, folks, 4,504 people were killed. During the Afghanistan War, 2,384 people were killed. In Baltimore City, since 2011, 2,016 people have been killed. We are not a city that's at war, technically. But I'm wondering if that's what we're dealing with. In Chicago, which is another inner city, 7,916 people have been killed. When we think about the impact of what it means to be black, and economically challenged in America at this moment, we have to take into account the work that has been done systematically by PNOCs to set up a system and mandate oppression, where it then comes out in our legal norms, our political norms, our economic norms, and our social norms. So even though oppression, legal oppression, has ended, legal oppression has ended, we know that oppression remains in our political, economic, and social norms. That is what the Kerner Commission said, folks. It's the hearts and minds of people that we're dealing with. You cannot mandate equality. You can't. You cannot mandate that people can look at someone and not judge them by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. You cannot mandate that. If you could, then you wouldn't have this white kid going in Louisiana and burning down three black churches. If you could, you wouldn't have this white man in Charlottesville driving his car into the middle of this march to tear down these Confederate statues. If you could mandate love, if you could mandate justice, if you could mandate equality, then we wouldn't see the impact that white hatred, white nationalism, white racism and white supremacy are having on our community today. It just came out recently that so far this year, 2019, that there's a chance we might go down in history as having the highest number of hate crimes ever. Because they've been looking at the documentation and tracking what's been happening. And we've had so many hate crimes already this year that there is a trend. This is 2019. Folks got so angry with President Barack Obama that they came back in full force. Let's talk about it. 410-319-8888. I'm going to Sandra from West Baltimore first. How are you?
Hi, I'm okay. And yourself?
I'm doing well. I would like
to have a copy of your when you were speaking at Georgetown University.
Yes.
How can one obtain such?
I'm gonna have you hold on, and Justina will give you the information, and I'll send you both my speech and the clip of it.
Well, do you offer that for sale? If you don't, you should.
Thank you very much. I usually don't. People, because, you know, everything is so available online.
Oh, yes.
But I typically sell my books. When people rarely ask me for my speeches. And so when people do, I tend to say, okay, people rarely ask me for that. So, Sandra, you're doing something that's rarely asked of me.
Well, as far as this letter from the Greater Baltimore Committee, I am so annoyed with what Mayor Pugh has done and the manner that it's being exposed. And it just looks like, you know, it was a pay-to-play kind of thing, you know, quid pro, which is bad. And she comes out looking to me like selling her soul for pennies. I'm still annoyed with the Port Covington deal. We don't know how to structure deals, and we have a tendency to make rash decisions, and we just don't take care of ourselves. Our political leaders have just been very disappointing as far as I'm concerned. The lack of jobs, our schools, we're not prepared for much of anything. I understand that they wanted a cybersecurity grant for Park Heights, and it was denied. Well, the Pentagon just awarded Amazon and Microsoft, DOD, the Department of Justice, $10 billion contract for clouds. For infrastructure of clouds, how many black people are going to be in a position to work those jobs? We're just unprepared, and we're not demanding and following through.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And hold on one second, Sandra. Don't hang up. Get your information so that I can send you that speech. What Sandra's talking about is I spoke at Georgetown University on becoming a radical public intellectual, and that's what she's talking about. Folks, when we talk about being prepared, it just made me think immediately of Nipsey Hussle. And let me tell you why. One of the things that Nipsey Hussle was committed to, along with other people, he's not the only one, but making sure that children, black children and brown children, have access to STEM training, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, to get them ready for jobs that haven't even been created yet. And I know some people want to call it STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. That's fine, too. But the idea is that our children need more of that type of training. We have Lucille on the phone from Mount Washington. Lucille, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Two things. Slavery, the hunter knew what to do because he observed his prey.
Mm.
When they brought us over here, they knew we were strong. So once they got us over here, they had to separate the black male from the family.
Mm.
Because in doing that, even though the women are strong, but the leadership was the male. And if you can break that away, you can crumble and eat away at the foundation.
Wow.
And it continues when they didn't want to give us. I was listening to the woman whose father couldn't get the job because he was black.
How many stories do we have like that, Lucille?
Right. And then it goes a little further. You do the college guy who's getting 12 years for kissing a white girl.
Yes.
But the white boy who raped somebody, he only got a few months.
He was suffering, what do they call it? Affluenza. I was like, what is that? It's white rich boys who fail.
That's more of a reason why he should have known better, because he supposedly had
Better. Yep.
Right. And then My other thing is with our mayor. If you're going to sell us out or you want to wheel and deal, tell them, okay, we'll give you this, but I want so many millions for each one of our public schools in the city. Yes. I want so much money for each community to get two or three rec centers. Get Helen and, I mean, not Helen, Harry and Jeanette Weinberg's name on some rec centers.
And get some places open. Well, would you feel, this is my last question for you, would you feel differently about the mayor if, say, she did get the, you know, $500,000, but she gave $100,000 to the schools, $100,000 to Sandtown, she gave $100,000 to, like she actually said, all the money she got went right back out in the community. Would you feel more forgiving?
I would still, well, that's how business is done.
Right.
So if she did it for the betterment of the city, okay. But okay. Right now, as far as we can see,
it's not. It didn't help anybody right now but her. Right.
Right.
Right. I mean,
right.
You know, let's talk about it. All right, right. We do, of course, wish the mayor well. Hope that she's recovering well from pneumonia. We have Halima on the phone, a new call from East Baltimore. Halima, how are you? And welcome to the family.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
I believe it's necessary that Kathleen Pugh, whatever is going on with the political monies, we know we're going to have that problem. I think what she should have now is a maternity school for children that are having children and parents that are going to be productive parents. But first and still, we need to have a new school, a specific new school. And that's what I'm waiting for my phone call to come back so I can go into that.
Okay.
The
I like
City
that.
Hall is not going to just listen to us over the phone. They're not going to listen to us on the media.
They're
it's
not.
Always going to be about that money.
And about showing up in the spaces when they're trying to make decisions and
being, yeah, and
disrupting
spaces,
the business
yeah.
so we can get our work done. Thank you so much, Halima.
Exactly.
I appreciate you. We have Roscoe on the phone from Baltimore. Roscoe, how are you?
Dr. K.
Hello.
All right, so I just have a little personal theory that I have. It's a theory that I use to keep positive in the state that we're in right now.
Okay.
So I'm just going to run past this real quick. You tell me what you think. Maybe I'm crazy, maybe not, but check me out. So it's 2019. Slavery began in 1619. So we've been oppressed for about 400 years.
Right.
Let's get past that.
Okay, a little bit less than four. I wouldn't say 400 years, but let me let you finish. Go ahead. Let me let you finish.
Almost 400.
Okay.
Almost
400. Yes.
So 1865, the 13th Amendment was passed.
Right.
And we were, slavery began in 1619.
About
so that
1657.
So that was about 246 years that we were enslaved. So today, again, it's 2019. We were freed in 1865. So we've had our freedom for about 154 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we were enslaved for 246 years, and then we've been free for 154 years.
Right.
246 minus 154 equals 92 years. So I personally believe that we have about, once we've been free, as long as we've been enslaved, then we'll be ready. We're not ready right now. You have to hit rock bottom before you can climb up. Right now with this genocide that we're going through with the quote-unquote black-on-black, that's the rock bottom. So I believe we have about another 100 years before we can flourish into the powerful people that we know we can be. So that 100 years, again, right now we're just the foot soldiers. We're probably not going to be remembered, but in about 100 years, our grandchildren are going to live the life that we dream of.
Mm.
And that's when we're going to start. That's when we're going to start to see black people. That's basically when the killing is going to stop. We didn't start killing each other until the drugs got put into our neighborhoods. This didn't start. White folks killed us before. The black on black started when the drugs got put into our neighborhoods, which was about the 60s or 70s or so. That's when it got real bad. So basically, my personal belief is once we reach that 100-year mark coming up, or 92 more years, that's when things are going to change. So this is my personal theory, and this is what I use to keep positive. So maybe somebody out there might hear, because you know, I hear a lot of negativity when people call in and they're fed up and things. But again, I think, you know, we're going to be dead and gone, but it's going to be something positive that's going to happen. It's going to be soon. And this is a short period of time in history.
Right.
This is a very, very short period of time. The Egyptians lived, they ruled for millenniums. So this is the 400, 500 years right now. That's a short period of time.
Okay.
We have so much more to go. We need to stay positive. So that's just my personal theory. I just wanted to drop that on you real quick.
No, I think your personal theory, there's some truth in your personal theory. I appreciate that. I know we got to get off the phone with you, but I do want you to listen, because I just want to kind of bring a little, just add a little flavor to what the last caller said and kind of tighten it up. When we arrived here, in 1619, because we know that we're celebrating 400 years of blackness in this country this year. When we arrived here in 1619, there's a lot of discussion about whether we were enslaved or whether we were indentured servants. We do know it was the beginning of the black community, and the folks who arrived here end up owning property, end up kind of expanding. Some lived in Baltimore, some moved to Annapolis, coming up from Jamestown, Virginia, with American enslavement kind of starting really around 1657. So if we go from 1657 to 1865, that's 208 years of American enslavement. When it ended in 1865, from 1865 to 1877, they call that the period of the most rapid development of the black community in the history of this country in that period, because of Reconstruction and the efforts, the founding of black colleges, the pouring of the money into the black communities, the establishing black schools and really working to educate people. That period of time ended in 1877 with the establishment of Jim Crow. So Jim Crow was around from 1877 to 1954. That was 77 years of legalized segregation from our schools to our restaurants to our neighborhoods, 77 years. And when that ended, roughly in 1954, there was still the launch of the civil rights movement to make those in power actually implement the law that had been set up. And that civil rights movement from 1954 up until about 1972 did have some impact. But by 2015, you had the launch of the Black Lives Matter movement. So when we talk about the years that we have been either legally enslaved or the years we were enslaved due to mandated oppression, you are correct. We've had very few years in this country where we dealt with open doors, equality, social justice, that we had equal opportunity in this country. The years do not add up. So it is a long game that we're playing, folks. It's a long game. We have to understand that when we read our history, we got to read it with one eye closed. Like, that's something when I lived with this blind woman in Kenya, she told me. She said, hey, when the white man writes your history, you got to read your history with one eye closed, because until the hunted learn how to read and write, the stories will always glorify the hunters. The people who write the stories will then write themselves in as the heroes and write you in as the ones who need to be oppressed. Today with Dr. K, let's keep talking. We have Margaret on the phone from Pikesville. Margaret, how are you? New caller, welcome to the family.
Thank you so much, Dr. K. I am a longtime listener, and I love your show, and it's really important to me every day in terms of my own self-development and growth, and I love you. I wanted to talk about the violence issue, not in within the African American community, because it would be inappropriate for me to even comment on that.
Right.
Although, as I've lived in Baltimore my whole life, which is I'm in my 60s, and it does really, really break my heart to see murder after murder every day. But I just want to say that I totally agree that all those factors, like the incredible impact of slavery, multi-generational, and then Jim Crow and the government and other institutions and flooding with drugs, all that, I agree, has led to creating a class, I think, you know, where it's a petri dish for violence. And I also believe in programming and brainwashing, and I haven't heard people talk too much about that. I really believe in, I mean, some people call it internalized depression, but I call it brainwashing.
Mm.
And I just want to say one other thing, Dr. K, is that living in Baltimore all my life and teaching kids in Baltimore and stuff, people forget that the United States of America as a whole, not just Baltimore or Detroit or whatever, is so majority white, okay? They're in the last census, and I know not, I think not everybody's in the census, but only 14% identified as black or African American. All those other states, 15 states where it's over 90% white, they all have representatives in Congress, in the House, in the Senate, the people who make the laws, the people who make the federal budget. And this is a tremendous amount of control. And whatever strategies that are come up with and that allies want to help with, I think we have to keep in mind that the greater nation and glorifies violence, it glorifies does. Oppression.
It does. Now, I have to stop you there, Margaret, because we have a lot of calls. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I appreciate you bringing in that notion of internalized oppression, folks. And
thank you
that.
So much.
I appreciate that. Folks, that's a term that comes out of social justice and sociology. But internalized oppression is when those that are oppressed, they take on the methods of the oppressor and they begin doing those things to themselves. Maybe it's not genocide that's happening in our community. Maybe. Maybe what it is what our caller just said. Maybe it's internalized oppression. You begin to believe that this is what you have in front of you. I want to take a few more calls, and I want to play that clip from Chicago. And I want to note that the clip from Chicago is graphic. So I want to give a disclaimer. We purposely waited until the last half hour. I want to say to some of my young listeners that this is a time when mommy and daddy or grandma or auntie and uncle need to step in, because this is a clip where the gentleman is talking about guns in Chicago and why he does what he does. And we made the decision not to beep out his questionable language. We wanted to have you hear it in his own words. We're going to play that clip now with the disclaimer that there is some graphic language on it. Let's take a listen to it.
In terms of the danger.
Danger. It's dangerous. It's real dangerous. You got people on this block into it with the people on the next block. It's right around the corner. You can't even go under the white lock. You can't even go around the corner because you into it with these people around the corner. It's a place full of madness.
Nusky's on house arrest, accused of carrying illegal guns, a charge he denies.
My dream is to make it. I want to be a rapper, just make it. Feed my family. That's all I'm focused on right now. Feed my family. Feed the ones who's loyal to me. People not loyal here no more.
You know, if you look at the percentage of people who are killed in America by guns, the vast majority are young black men.
Definitely. I mean, growing up with us, it was more about hustling and trying to get money. The younger generation now, not so focused on money. They're more focused on violence, killing, and, you know what I'm saying, all the internet, social media, wars, violence, and all that, you know, and then just spills out into the streets, you know, and all.
That is a little clip from the documentary about Chicago. Folks, we had a longer piece planned. We know we're running short on time, so we decided to cut it, but it continues where they begin to talk about how real it is in their community. My hope, and I'm asking Justine to put this in the book, that next week we can delve in a little bit deeper and we can play that whole clip for you, because it is powerful, it is painful. It's also for us here in the last 10 minutes, we don't have enough time to get into it. If you're interested in that documentary, give us a call at 410-319-8888 and Justine will get the information to you. You can go and take a look at it. We have Holland on the phone from downtown Baltimore. Holland, how are you?
How you doing, Dr. K? Good to hear your voice. I'm going to be real quick with this. The lady that was on a few minutes ago was right on it. Just the whole psychological brainwashing that goes on in our society. Unfortunately, if we look at 9/11, what happened, our heart goes out to 3,000 people being lost. Mm. But if you look at what has come out of that and how that our people have been recruited in this whole domestic spying, everybody, if you want something to do, first of all, question yourself, why am I participating? Mm. Why am I riding around spying on people? You have to do that, because otherwise you think you're doing something patriotic,
right,
but really you have become a pawn in this mad game. You really have. Ask yourself that question, and if you find the right answer, you'll stop doing it. God bless you, Dr. K.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much, Holland. We have Jamila on the phone. Jamila, how are you?
Hi there. I'm doing fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I'm going to keep this brief, and the first thing I want to say is that our marketing campaign has been terrible, and slavery has been one of the biggest marketing campaigns to keep people of color, black people, especially in this country, since that's the topic, down. And we can look at all of the imagery, all of the stereotypes, even the good stereotypes, so-called good stereotypes, are even bad when we talk about ourselves. So we need our own marketing campaign.
We
need better images. And yes, that is connected to slavery. And throughout the years, one of my brothers who said that we only have a very, we come far, but yet we have so far to go. So we definitely need improvement there. And the second thing I want to throw out there, Plan the Advocate, a lot of people would say, with all of the violence, yes, it is terrible. And I also feel that black people, we're not a monolithic people. We have different opinions. We have different upbringings. And the question I have is, what does that have to do with me? Of course, that is a big question for a lot of people. That's not how I grew up. That's not how I live. What does that have to do with me? And because we have so many people who are gone in their state of mind, they're living in that underworld, some of it, sometimes I just feel hopeless about it. Not necessarily me, but I'm just speaking from the voice that asks these types of questions.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I got to stop you there, Jamila.
Yes,
folks,
ma'am.
I appreciate you. We have about 9 minutes left. I'm going to try to get to every phone call as well as keep one or two more lines open if you want to jump in on this. So I'll keep all the next topics. If you can keep them under a minute and give me your comment, I can get everybody in. Leroy from the Virgin Islands. Leroy, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. I'm calling because I just purchased a home in a house in Baltimore, and I was on the block of the house, and I saw these two people arguing. I think they were doing selling their little drugs on the corner, and one guy is telling the other guy what he would do to this gentleman if the guy only reason why he wasn't going to do it is because the guy would snitch on him, and the guy who's he's threatening to say, "I'm not a snitch." That's the problem right there in Baltimore. The problem is this. When they do things, nobody talk. Nobody tell. Nobody see anything. And because of that, they keep doing it. And they could do it and they get bolder and bolder as they do it. If they know that, you know what, if the community knows that you did something and the community would tell that the person did it, all this stuff will stop. But when you look at the person being threatened and the person who is being threatened is telling the other person who's doing the threatening, oh no, I'm not a snitch. That's crazy.
All right, I got to stop you there, Leroy. I'm sorry. I said I was going to do a minute, and Justine is holding me to it. We have Tavon on the phone from Woodlawn. Tavon, how are you?
How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well, thank
you. I was going to see if you had an email because what I have to say is going to take longer than a minute.
Okay,
no
problem.
And I would rather somebody else.
Okay, you hold on 1 second, Tavon. Justine is going to get your information and give you my email address, but just so you know, so everyone can have it. Folks, you can email me here at Today with Dr. K. Today with DRKAYE. Today with Dr. K at gmail.com. The name of the show is our email address. Email us anything. We'd love to get information from you. We have Ernest on the phone from Baltimore. Ernest, how are you?
Thank you. Number 45 is not qualified to run the country. Everybody knows that.
Yes.
Nobody has asked him to resign.
I know.
In reference to white people being killed, well, it was over 3,000 white people killed in 9/11. Not an investigation. No investigation. All the evidence was shipped to China. And nobody questioned George Bush or any other people for Dr. Wolfowitz, Paul Wolfowitz, who called for the damning of those two buildings in the project of the New American Century. None of those people in the project of the New American Century have been questioned. So, and the other thing, Dr. K, what this man said earlier, that nobody's snitching. People are snitching. They got snitching lines in the police department.
Right.
And people get paid when they give correct information. So, and the final thing is this. Police in the United States are not now being trained in Israel by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force.
Oh, I got to stop you there, Ernest. Thank you so much. Folks, I have Robert on the phone. We're doing a minute, and we're sticking to it. Hey, Robert, how are you?
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir.
I just want to ask you a couple questions and answer. You know, one of our problems was we five generations removed right now from me speaking to you. Five generations ago, black people were not debriefed coming out of slavery. As when people come over here, they went to Ellis Island, and they were debriefed from their conditions. So that's one of the reasons why this generational carryover and the fact that when they came out, they wanted to be so much like the Caucasian people.
Right.
So
that is indoctrination, right? I want to be clear.
Yes.
It wasn't like we just woke up and said, hey, we want to be like people not of color. POCs
is
indoctrination.
Why would you want to be like somebody that mistreated you?
Because you've always been taught they're better than you, right? Come on, let's remember that too, right, Robert?
Yeah. And see, that's one of the things we got to understand that we brought on ourselves. And secondly, I'd like for you to read the names of those people
your call for Pooh's.
I absolutely will. I'll do it right now. Thank you so much. So, folks, one of the things I want to do, we have just a little bit of time left. Justina told me, but I have to say this because earlier I teased and told you I was going to tell you the name of the entities that have called on Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh to resign. Number one, every rank and file member of the city council has called on Mayor Catherine Pugh to resign. Number two, the city's legislation delegation, they have called on her to resign. Number three, the Baltimore Sun editorial page has called on her to resign. Number four, the Washington Post editorial page has called on her to resign. And number five, the Greater Baltimore Committee, a leading business group today, called on Baltimore City Mayor Catherine Pugh to resign. Folks, we're going to leave it there. I want to ask you to make an appointment. Meet me back here on Monday at 3 p.m. Let's have another conversation that matters. I want to call out my colleague Faraji Muhammad for his excellent job yesterday in interviewing Reverend Al Sharpton. It was an amazing show. You got to keep it here. He'll be right up after the break for the Culture with Faraji Muhammad. And I want to shout out the person who I rented a car from today. The brother was so helpful at National Car Rental. He said to me as I was going to my car, he said, yo, I set your radio station to 88.9 because you got to listen to Dr. K. She comes on at 3. She speaks some real truth. He did not know why I smiled. It's because I was so happy. This is The Day with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Keep it here, folks.